What's going on, everybody? Quick update. Embion, our sponsor. That's right, I have a sponsor. Shout out to Embion Studios for sponsoring this and every upcoming and every previous video and episode I've done and all my future projects. Oh, it feels so good to say it. I have a sponsor. All right, guys. If you go to Embion right now, and you are looking for web hosting, if you are looking to get into some comics, if you're looking to, if you're an artist looking for a table, or if you're an artist, exhibitor, creator of any kind, and you're looking at a table at EmbionCon, and you use the promo code TAOSBYLAW, that's right, simple and easy, TAOSBYLAW, you can save 10% on any of your Embion purchases. So if you go, you go, hey, I want to get a table at the con coming up this year. That's August 24th, I believe, at Hofstra University. You can save 10% on your table. If you are looking to get into some comics, save 10% with my promo code. If you are looking to get into web hosting, if you're like, hey, how do I get a website, Lawrence? Yo, I need something simple, quick, and easy to use. Come hit us up. We got you for it. It's so easy, it's so simple, it's outright just ridiculously easy to use. I promise you won't regret it. 10% saved with every promo code use. Guys, I appreciate the love and I appreciate the support. Go follow Embion for everything that they do. Show them some love, show them some support. I love those guys and I thank you. Thank you so much for sponsoring this video, this podcast, this project, everything that I do. As always, follow your path. Peace. What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Law from the Art of Storytelling, TAOSBYLAW, and welcome back to another episode of What's Your Story. This week we are featuring my very dear friend Demetrius Lane. If you haven't heard about him, go check him out. I will leave links in the description. He is a R&B singer with so much soul, so much love and compassion in his heart. He's one of my very best friends, brother from another mother, and his story is one of just so much love and joy and passion. I want to keep emphasizing on those things. I'm gonna get into it. I'm gonna let you guys enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side. All right, peace. So, welcome back to another episode of The Art of Storytelling, TAOSBYLAW. What's your story? Let me redo that. That felt inorganic. I'm sorry, guys. that felt so like forced old man audio. Like, hello guys, and welcome back. Got a little ASMR on you.
Oh no.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Law from the Art of Storytelling, TAOSBYLAW, and today I have a very, very special guest. If you have heard our stuff on Geek Ronin, you've heard this guest before. If you have saw my Instagram stories, you've seen him up there. It is my brother from another mother, my boy, my homie, Demetrius Lane.
Yay! It's me. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, man.
It's fun to have you on the show. It's fun to always be with you. So this is going to be a really awesome talk, I think.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So tell the people out there a little about yourself. Like, who are you? What do you do? How do you know me? That kind of thing. Mm. Well, save the how do you know me for, like, last. Like,
we'll talk about that. Yeah. So I'm Demetrius, 29 years young. A Bronx, New York native. Let's see. You know, I'm a singer and a songwriter. Right now, my EP Unspoken is out, available everywhere.
I need more contact. I'm just saying. I'm not asking for too much, but I'm asking for a lot right now.
Well,
listen. Just a little bit more.
What do you need? What do you need more?
Yo, listen. 5
I know it's an EP. I know it was an EP. And I knew from the time you dropped it, it was going to only be like 5 songs. But it left me wanting more.
It's
for sure.
It's short on purpose. I think that the current landscape of like music consumerism, well, let me not say that. Like, I really feel like the trend now is that people don't have long attention spans.
No. And they don't do albums.
Some people do. I mean,
well, I feel like we're in that, like, everything is so readily available. You can pick and choose and what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of like tailor your own, like, playlist, essentially. So you don't need the entire album if you only want the 2 or 3 songs.
Well, I mean, there's a trend and then there are exceptions to the rules, right? So let's say, for example, Chris Brown's album, Heartbreak on a Full Moon, that album is like 40 something songs on purpose.
Okay.
On purpose. Drake's album Scorpion, his most recent release, is 2 sides. It's like almost 25, right. 26 songs, right? But then there are kind of like
those are callbacks, like, you know, the Jay-Z Blueprint 2 kind of albums, like the double albums of.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it just really, really varies depending on how much material people want to put out, how much is like appropriate for the time. And
okay,
like I remember growing up, I think Thriller was maybe like 8 songs,
something like that. Yeah,
Thriller was 8 songs, maybe 9 songs at best.
Okay.
And that's one of obviously the best selling albums ever. But Confessions, which was a diamond album, right?
Okay.
Has 17 songs on the standard edition.
Yeah,
right. So
yeah,
it really just varies. Okay. I mean, it doesn't make it any better or worse, but I wanted to make this project relatively consumable so that people can listen to it and listen to it over again because they were looking for something else. Like, it kind of forces you to find things.
Okay.
Because you don't really have time to like zone out or overthink it or passively listen to it.
Yeah, this is true. And then even the song structures themselves, I think your longest song is Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything else is almost, like, just under 3 or in that ballpark.
Well, that's kind of, like, the music industry standard right now. Like, I think that people try to aim for maybe 3 minutes or less so that people can consume it without losing focus on it. Now, some people kind of, like, defy that and troll it on purpose. Like, Pyramids, for example, by Frank Ocean. If you ever listen to that song, Both Sides, the song is almost, like, 7 minutes. And people are aware of that, you know. But I wanted to make this EP about as, not as short as possible, but as consumable as possible. So that way, you know, thematically it tied together. It made sense. You didn't get overwhelmed by.
And this was a self-expression, just like a passion project. You just wanted to get it off your chest.
Oh, listen, this is, it's more than a passion project. This is like the first step in my career. For a long time, I wanted to release an album, but then I stopped believing in myself. And then I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to do it, and I'm good enough to do it. So this is me proving to myself that taking myself seriously has its benefits.
Okay.
And I would encourage most people who struggle with that, especially artists and creative people, to like follow through, even if you're not sure, even if, you know.
It's definitely something hard to do, and I struggle with it myself from time to time, where we're kind of given this perception that art isn't a sustainable career or path, if you will. Like, it's not something, because there's no safety net for artists in a lot of ways. Like, when we were kids, we knew you could be successful as a comic artist, let's say, but we didn't understand how many people there is. You heard like the 1 or 2 names and you're like, those are the only 2 people who are successful. There's so many more components of what goes into a comic book and what goes into that industry. You can go into that and, you know, live a full career life, but we teach kids otherwise. We teach kids from the books, by the books, and to regurgitate and spit it out on paper for a test.
Well, okay, there are many layers to what you just said, and I'll try to address them one by one. Now, first, is our educational system, right? I think that you raise a fairly good point that people aren't, like, educated. They're all educated the same way, and they're all expected the same things, which doesn't play to anyone's strengths, especially as children, because a lot of children learn in different ways. They think in different ways, and we don't nurture that as much as we should in schools so that they can use that as a skill later in life to be successful in some arena, right?
Absolutely.
So there's that. Now, in terms of our upbringing where we're being forced to say, like, hey, we need to get a job. We need to graduate from, like, college and get this and get that so that we can have a good job. I think that that's also kind of like a misstep in development for children as well, because
there's, you know, no guarantees anymore.
Well, there's no guarantees, but also that might not even be... It's very, very manufactured. Like, it's not... It doesn't... equal success, if that makes sense. Like, me getting a corporate job, yeah, that's fine, and it's stable, I suppose, but I'm not necessarily going to be happy about it if that's not something that I want to do. Like, we were told as kids that, you know, we should think about, you know, the sense, the parts of stability that matter, and not really the parts of happiness that matter either.
I was thinking about that for the last... you know, I am a very big advocate on what makes your kids happy and, like, stoking those flames. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I work with kids. I've been working with kids for forever. I'm an uncle. I've been an uncle since, like, 10 years old. I've always wanted to push and, you know, help my kids, students, like, nephews and nieces and whatnot, all strive to be the best version of themselves. If they're like, yo, I want to be a magician, do it.
Go for it.
I'll give you my old decks of cards. I'll give you some magic tricks and this and this. Do it. Go for it. Because not everything is for everyone. And I think when you get older and you start to see, like, you know, you start to see, like, that whole, I'm in this job for 20 years doing the same thing, and it gets, like, mundane, and you're just sitting in a cubicle and you're trying to figure out why you're not enjoying yourself, like, and you're like, oh man, I wish I still drew, I wish I still did this. And it's sad, it's really sad, because not everyone's meant to be a there's people in this world who should be and can be a great 9-to-5er, who can be a great boss, who can be a great employee, but then there's other people who don't fit those aspects, and they have to be their own bosses, or they have to be their own freelance professionals in their own right and whatever they do. And I think artists are above and beyond, like, that kind of role and expectation, because we don't do well with thinking inside the box. We have to always be outside the box.
I'll say three things about this. The first thing about this is that I'm never going to discourage people from actually doing, like, 9-to-5 type jobs. You learn a lot of really, really important skills there that may carry over into, I guess, the real world, or something abstract like going outside of the 9-to-5 kind of zone, right? So I would never discourage that. That's one. I think that sometimes, too, it is necessary. Like myself, for example, I work a regular job so that I can support then my goal, my dream job. And it allows me a sense of stability and allows me a sense of financial kind of like consistency that allows me to then be an artist. I will admit that it does take up large amounts of time, which is my third point. At some point, people have to decide what's more important, their time or their money. And as an artist, at least for me, as a recording artist and as someone who likes to perform and likes to be available to travel and do music in other spaces, I find it very, very difficult to find the balance between when I can travel and when I have to be at work. Like, work stifles me a little bit. So my goal is to find a job in the music industry so that way it's a little bit easier for me to navigate the music industry.
Right.
Previously, I used to work for Sprint, and, you know, it's telecommunications, and it's great, but it was very, very restrictive. I spent a lot more time at work than I wanted to, doing things that I didn't really care to do, and watching everyone else find avenues that helped them pursue their dreams. And of course, at work, we're in front of these phones all day, and we're helping people who come in, and they're like, well, I need my phone fixed because I'm running a business, or I'm losing customers because my phone doesn't work, or whatever. Like,
right.
We're supporting people who are out there going to get it. And I always support, like, just letting not just children, but other people know that it's okay to chase your dreams, even if they're not a 9-to-5. Follow your passions. Dabble in it when you can.
Mm-hmm.
And stay consistent with it, because, you know, that's going to add value to your life. We have to kind of understand, too, that success isn't the same for everybody. Like, my level of success is not really anyone else's level of success. Like, for me, releasing this EP is a level of success. I've never done that before.
Right.
And it's been met with really, really good reviews. I'm not going to boast about it, but, you know, people...
Listen, I will shout him out. Till I lose my voice, go check out this EP. If you love R&B, if you love soul, if you just love good, like, from the heart music, this, y'all be like, oh, Drake has you in your feels. This whole EP had me in my feels all the time. Like, I'll be singing certain lyrics without, like, knowing that I'm singing, like, lyrics to his song. I'm just singing them because they're so in my head. They're so ingrained in me. You guys definitely should check it out. I'll have links in the description.
Please go and check it out. You might find something that resonates with you.
Yeah.
You know, these are, you know, real life experiences and things like that. I wrote a lot about how I felt and how I wanted to. It's a catharsis for me. It allowed me to be vulnerable because in my circle, I was kind of discouraged about being too emotional or, you know, being expressive about my emotions, you know?
That's so... I always found that strange because as an artist, I feel like we always reach into that well for emotion to be our muse or our catalyst for things.
Let me paint the picture to you like this. As a black man in America, right? We sometimes encounter parts of our lives where we're told to man up and to ignore our feelings or to, you know, only feel certain types of ways. Like,
absolutely.
Our masculinity...
I got that discussion from a friend of mine the other day.
Our masculinity depends on what kind of emotions that we show, right?
Right.
Anger, aggression, you know, forwardness, that sort of thing. Like, I'm not an alpha male, I'll tell you that right now. I'm more like a beta male, right?
Okay.
Where I'm a little bit less aggressive, I'm less passive. I mean, I'm a little more passive than some other people, but I'm not, like, always upset. I keep to myself. Like, I don't like confrontation, that sort of thing.
Right.
So for me, growing up in a society where, like, the restriction of our emotional range is a real thing. Like, this album for me allows me to tell people, hey, like, it's okay for you to say how you feel, to be upset, to be honest about who you were and what you've done, and to find forgiveness and acknowledgement in that. For example, the song Jordan talks about a relationship that I had with someone that I ruined, like my actions ruined it. And it's all about, thematically, the album is about just saying, telling the truth and not leaving anything unspoken. And that's where the title comes from. But primarily, I wanted it to display a few things, you know, normalizing black male masculinity and black male, like, emotional kind of, like, range, you know, black male intimacy and that sort of thing. Like, it's my life, and I just want to normalize these behaviors because it'll end the cycle of, you know, mental issues, emotional issues, that sort of thing. And it's just a catharsis for me. I didn't really have a better outlet to put all my feelings on, so I put them in pen and paper and put them in the studio.
Okay. Did you have that same level of support, like, growing up? Did you have, like, the people in your life, in your circle, to stoke those flames from an early age? Like, did you know, like, hey, I'm 3, I'm gonna be a singer-songwriter, and then people were like, cool, let's go run with this?
So here's a little story. When I was young, I wanted to be a writer. Like a creative writer, right?
Okay.
So telling stories, I wanted to be an author, you know.
I can actually still see you doing it.
Right. I'm trash at developing characters. That's always been my weakness. But, yeah, I wanted to do that. And then around fourth grade, I started to do poetry, which I really enjoyed. Mm. I didn't start singing until I was 14. So it was really late. Yeah, I was like in the 10th grade. It was really late. But even in high school, I had a support system that was strong enough for me to want to continue to do it. I mean, I
how did you know that you could even sing? Like, what was that like, you know, oh, shit, I think I'm able to do this.
My sister is a singer.
Okay.
And when I was younger, I would just kind of like, you know, I'm one of the youngest of my five siblings. And my older sister sings, and I just wanted to sound like her. She sounded good. And we would sing along together. It was kind of like how we bonded, you know. And how I knew or how I gained some confidence in singing is basically hearing other people singing and repeating it and saying, oh, I can sing this just like that. Mm. Like, it's just a matter of me feeling like I was able to do something like that and me continuing to do it because I knew that I could. So 10th grade rolls around. You know, I'm like, I guess I can sing. Like, what are you all singing? And they gave me a song to sing, and they were like, you sound really good. And I was like, I don't know. Are you sure? Like, I didn't have any confidence in myself, like, at all, because I was just doing what I thought that I could. It wasn't, like, me being conceited or like, oh, I can sing and I know it. Like, no, this sounds like something that I can do. And so I just went along and did it. Flash forward, here we are, you know?
Nice.
Yeah, but in high school, they really, really supported me. I was like, they released an album of mine of where my song was the lead song on the album that I'd written when I was like 16. Like, I sung at my own graduation for the open event.
Can we find, like, is there a deep dive we could do on that?
If you find it, you let me know. because I've never seen any footage. I mean, I've done musical theater, so there may be videos of that somewhere. I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, that's kind of the support system I needed to catapult myself into believing that, like, I am a musician and I am good enough and I can do this. And so I will. but yeah, I mean, singing for me has always been something of interest. And I started to take it seriously at some points, and then I started to be like, oh, I don't know, it's not good enough.
You're mostly self-taught until one point.
I'm mostly self-taught. Even now, I mean, I take workshop classes, but they're not like specialized vocal lessons, if that makes sense. My vocal lessons for me consist of listening to people and finding things about what they do that I can't do, if that makes sense. Or that I could do if I applied myself a little bit more. So, for example, I listened to Tom Jones the other day, right?
We were just talking about Tom Jones.
Tom Jones is incredible. And he's been in the game for 1,000 years, right?
Right.
But the way he sings is a skill. Mm. It's a talent, yeah, but he has a very, very unmatched skill about the way that he sings, the way that he pronounces his vowels,
right,
the way that he holds his notes, you know what I mean? And here I am trying to emulate, like, singing like him with, like, opening my mouth, like,
right,
singing the vowels, like, this is how I learn. And so that for me is like how I develop myself as an artist, by just trying to find new things to do and ways to expand upon what I already know.
Okay. All right, we're gonna go a little full circle. One of the first opening questions was, how did you know me? How did you get here? How did you end up in this situation?
Oh, I took the train. Lawrence and I met in Lehman College back in 1966. It's been a while.
It's been like 4 years.
It has been. And we met each other in a creative writing class. Mm-hmm. Now, this happened to have been one of my favorite classes, which is why I took it. And he sat behind me closer to the back. Meanwhile, I sat in the front because I'm that kind of student.
Listen, we're not going to call me out of all kind of student.
I was going to point out that I have a short attention span, so me sitting in the back would have distracted me.
Oh, okay. I was like, I feel a little called out right now.
No, I mean, sitting in the back, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm that kind of studious kind of person. Gotcha. Where I would sit in the front and be like, oh, I'm ready to learn. Like, I'm really like that kind of student. But yeah, Lauren sat behind me. I'd mentioned something about his hat or some comment that he made in class about something.
It had to be something nerdy that we both looked at each other and acknowledged him. Like,
it's like, oh, I knew it.
We're going to be boys.
Like, yeah. He wore a Batman hat to class all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which would tell you that Batman was obviously one of his favorites. And I always picked up on that. I think that you had a Legend of Zelda hat as well. And I was like, I really like that hat.
Oh, no. It wasn't the Legend. It was my Fallout hat.
Something.
It was either my Fallout hat or... oh, man. Or it must have been my... I have a Bioshock shirt, too. That might have been it, too. It was something...
It was one of your pieces of gear that I really liked. And I don't usually talk to classmates unless we're working. But I spoke to him out of me being nervous because I was like, he's probably going to, you know, act weird. Like, he doesn't have time to talk to me. But I spoke to him. I was like...
Am I not standoffish?
It's just we were adults. Like, you know, after class, it's like, okay, I got to get to my next class. If not that, then I have to go to work. Like,
right.
I don't really have time, to socialize. But you took the time, and we started to speak. We wound up being partners on a group project.
Yeah.
We found a lot of things in common in terms of that class, and then we started to hang out outside of class, which really, like, you know, helped us to understand who we were for each other. Like, you are my friend, and you're one of my favorite people.
Aww.
And I think that I wouldn't have been able to get through college without you.
Listen, you and Hutch need to stop trying to make me cry on my old podcast. Like, yeah, I need to stop.
So yeah, you know, here we are, still supporting each other, and you know, it's just a thing. Like, I don't like to say this because I feel like it's a little bit like overwhelming, but I love you, and I hate to say that in
absolute, listen,
in such a way that like it's restrictive. Like, even me prefacing saying I love you
so
with that is like,
Dennis is such a big advocate, and I think it's such a weird notion that people don't tell, like, especially guys, like, they don't tell their like bros or like they love them. And I'm, you know me, I'm like, oh bro, I'm super. Like,
I've learned to be that way.
That person.
I've learned to be that way because, you know, like I said, I've been, you know, in environments where people don't receive that very well. Like,
yeah, it's weird. Like, you mentioned it before. It's that weird sense of toxic masculinity where you can't really express, like, how you feel about your bros and, like, friends. And it's like, yo, like, we've been through some shit together. Like,
yes, we have.
We're ride or die. Like, it is what it is, you know what I mean? I don't care how I don't care how anyone else perceives it, but I know where you stand in my life.
Right.
And, you know, I'll put this into more context. So, 2015, I meet Demetrius. We immediately bond over nerdy shit. Sounds very similar and akin to Dennis because it was almost around the same time.
Right.
We're in the same class together, and we, you know, started talking about this, talking about that. All the while, I am dealing with a lot of stuff at home and in my personal life, what have you. 2015 was a particularly rough year, you know, between my grandfather passing, you know, getting over a lot, like a lot of change and a lot of things happening in my life. And I remember, like, we were friends on Facebook. I mean, we were friends on Instagram. And I put up a post, and you kind of were just like, holy shit, bro, I didn't realize.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't so much that I don't know that it was you reaching out or the gesture, but I think because you noticed. I think it was because of you, because a lot of people just see that post of just like, yo, I've been through some shit this year, so if you guys see me and this is kind of why. But the fact that he noticed, the guy that, you know, I kind of hang out with in class and we bond and we're cool, like, that moment of him acknowledging that and being like, I'm here for you, I feel for you, like, I got you, bro, was, like, instantaneous, like, this is my bro. Like, we're gonna be best of friends. Like, you can't tell me nothing.
I'm a very astute and observant person, so I can tell when things are wrong with you. Even, like, in the beginning, like, when your mood is off, I didn't want to come off and say something's wrong with you because people also don't respond well to that either.
Right.
But I was always like in tune with how you felt because sometimes the little things that you do there and it shows like something's not all the way right. And so that's for me, that's kind of, you know, an important part of our relationship. Like just being able to know how to approach people who aren't necessarily up to task or who may be going through something but don't want to talk about it at the moment or, mm-hmm. you know, just people who are afraid of, like, letting those things out because they don't want to be overwhelmed or emotionally, like, incapacitated by their thoughts or feelings. Like, I'm always here to support you, man. Like, sometimes you don't even have to tell me. Like, we're just...
Yeah, and, I have to give shout-outs and props where props are due. Between you, Dennis, Hutch, my cousin Dave, like... There's been times, like, actual times where I've just been in my lows and been in my woes. And I don't really say anything, but it's almost like I send off a beacon mm-hmm. of energy. Because I've had it where, like, I'm feeling off, you'll call me. Yeah. And I'll be like, how'd you know? You'll be like, oh, I just had a feeling I should call you. Mm-hmm. Dennis has done it. Hutch has done it. My cousin Dave has done it. And I'm here saying I appreciate all of you guys for it, like, so much. I've had... you know, many a, like, hour-long walk conversations where I'm walking back and forth on the concourse to my spot across the street from Lehman at Harris Park, you know, and we're just sitting talking on the phone, and I'm getting out all of my woes and troubles and, you know, tribulations.
And successes, too, because you call me when something happens to you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Like, I remember because, again, 2015 was such a interesting year. I started Imbion in May of 2015. And it was such a, like, interesting time because I had just started this, like, great new, like, career that I never thought possible. I literally just told myself, you know, a few months prior at Comic-Con that I want to do this and be a part of this for the rest of my life. And here I am now a part of this great team with a cool mentor and, you know, I'm doing so much stuff. So I was really excited. And I'm, you know, doing shows, I'm doing this, and along the way, like, I found, like, my crew, I found my people, and Demetrius was there pretty much every step. Every time I was just, like, in my woes or in my highs, Demetrius was there, and he was here for it. There was, like, no judgment, no whatever. It was just like, yeah, go ahead. I wanna be there for you, and I want to share with you in this. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever the situation is. And I've always appreciated him for that.
How many of us have that? I appreciate it.
I remember like us going across the street and talking, and like we had like really, really good talks. Like, I think almost every talk of ours has been somewhat like not purposely deep, but they get to a level of like of deeper conversation that most people don't have, and it's very refreshing. I'm not one for constant deep conversation because for me personally it gets tiresome. Mm-hmm. However, if done naturally and organically, I'm all for it, and with Demetrius I've always been able to get that. So
I ask very simple questions, and sometimes I don't even talk at all, and then it just reminds me. I just listen, honestly.
Yeah, but I mean it goes both ways. Like even a shout out to Guy is another one that I want you guys, well, I want Demetrius to meet, but Guy is another one who was there for me and, you know, brings up all these great questions. But like, there would be times where we'll talk about everything from games to character development to what creates a good story to music to passions to love to projects to what the big picture is. Like, 2015, I hadn't even picked up a camera yet. I was kind of doing the podcast, but not in this capacity. I was doing the We the Geek podcast, I think. No, that didn't even happen until 2016. So, like, a lot of stuff from then to now is such a big leap and change. And for, you know, someone to be there and be like, dude, I support this. I'm with it. Let's go. Let's make these moves. While all the while where, you know, I'm struggling with going, you know, I think I'm going to leave school. I don't think it's for me. But I don't want to not support my friend who is in school and feels like school is for him. So I'm, you know, trying to still be supportive, but I also know that he's an artist, so I'm trying to support that. I'm just here for it, but I don't want to discourage him from being out of school as well.
Oh, I mean, being out of school is a personal choice. I didn't start until really, really late anyway. Started college when I was 24. So it's not like...
Well, by the time you met me, I was in my third college. So yeah. I did Bronx Community fresh out of high school at 17 for like 3 semesters. Technically what would have been my sophomore semester or spring semester of 2007. I went to Purchase for the semester. And then I just was like, yo, I'm not with it. Like, I want a break. I really just want a break. And my mom was like, you're not just going to sit there and do nothing. You're going to work. And I was like, all right. So I just got my LifeWire certification. And I worked for like 7 years. So by the time I got into college, I was already like 20. I was like 25, I want to say. More or less. Mm-hmm. Maybe 26. And, I remember there was one class, you weren't in this class, but I told you about it, where I said something like, yeah, my first time in college. And my classmates kind of looked at me really weird. And my teacher was like, huh? And I was like, yeah, I've been out for like 7 years now. And they were like, what? Wait, how old are you? Because in my class, I had mostly like young 20, 19-year-olds, that kind of thing. And then the polar opposite where you have, like, clearly you're, like, a mom, dad, like, trying to do your thing.
Working parents.
Working parents. Like, you're trying to get your thing together. Nothing against them. They look great for their age, but you can tell the contrast difference. I was in the middle, and I thought people knew that. Like, I really assumed that people were just like, oh, yeah, you're... And then I would tell people I'm 25 or 26, and the whole class kind of, like, did that, like... grab their seats, lean back and look at me and just like, what?
Right.
And my professor was just like so confused. He was very didn't expect it at all. It was definitely a fun moment.
Oh, I mean, that happens quite often. I mean, luckily for me, starting college at 24 allowed me to,
aka black don't crack, but you know,
good black never cracks, listen. Starting college at 24 really helped me shape how to prioritize my college experiences. Yeah. Like, making sure that I did what I had to do and not linger or waste time doing things that were superfluous or unnecessary to get this degree. And making sacrifices to adjust to that, you know what I mean? I think that when you start off going to college right away, you tend to live the college life where you're kind of like, your social life revolves around like your campus or your classes or what have you. I had to be at work and I lived on my own. So, you know, I couldn't linger. I didn't have the time to linger.
Right.
You know, I had to make adjustments to my schedule so that I could be at college and focus on it like wholeheartedly while focusing on 4 or 5 other things that my adult life had in store for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a blessing, man. Like, college is fun, depending on...
I think you're still one of... So, I, you know, 3 schools in, a Purchase, I made a lot of friends, but yeah. I made a lot of those friends before I even was an official student, so yeah. I don't quite count my Purchase experience. BCC, I don't think I came out of there with a friend that I still keep in contact today. But Lehman... Like, I was fortunate enough where I still have some friends like I talk to, but like no one like Demetrius, where like me and him talk almost on the regular when we can, and it's just like this is my bro. Like, we came out almost as if, like, you know, I've known him since I was a kid. You know what I mean? Like, we're that close.
Right.
And
we lived in the really same neighborhood. You lived here for I lived down the block.
I know, yeah. It's so crazy.
I used to go to PS79 right across the street.
Yeah.
That was my school. I lived on 181st and Walton right there. I can walk there from here.
That's so crazy.
We live both on 181st Street. So I'm pretty sure that in a past life somewhere, I've probably run into you as a child.
Yeah. Same with Dennis. Dennis was, Dennis worked at Marshaloo, went to my rival high school. Like, there were so many times and ways I could have met Dennis as a kid, even though I'm a little bit older than him, but like, our circles are always overlapping, and I found it so funny.
It's very, very interesting.
Yeah. But, so, all right. I want to kind of get into, how you made that transition from school to, like, out of school, where you're like, I want to focus on music. What was that conversation like?
So a few things happened about why I left school. A lot of it was because work made it very difficult for me to be at school.
Right.
And because I lived on my own, it's not like I had, like, a lot of stuff to fall back on. Like, I couldn't just focus solely on school and let that be what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But work made it very hard for me to be in school. And because I worked 5 days a week and on my off days, I had to go to school all day. You know, I was very tired all the time. Like, my commitments were starting to, like, suffer because... not because of school and not particularly because of work, just the way my life was so packed with things.
Everything was a priority and couldn't always be a priority because
I had to prioritize and remanage a lot of things about my life, and I just felt like the way I wanted to be involved in school, I couldn't, because I only went to school those 2 days, and anything extracurricular was going to take up more time from work. So, for example, when I was at school, I did musical theater. I've done a couple of, like, plays and performances, things like that. You know, I wanted to take, like, lessons on the side and be, like, really, really extracurricular, because that's the kind of person I am.
Right.
I went to school for music, so I was interested in being a part of the whole music scene at Lehman College, but it took up a lot of time. And, you know, my job was not having it. Like, it was already... a stretch that they would give me Tuesday and Thursday off every week.
Gotcha.
Consistently, because in the retail environment,
And at the time, you were a manager.
Yeah. I was a supervisor at Starbucks. And so Tuesdays and Thursdays are fairly, fairly busy days, especially for supervisors there. And, you know, I was able to do it, but I didn't want to push it.
Right.
By saying, hey, I'm not available Tuesdays or Thursdays or any time after 5, because that's when rehearsals were. Like,
Shout out to my pops for doing it. Like, my pops went back to school. I was already, like, in junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And he graduated college by the time I was graduating 8th grade. And I remember it. And then I'm just, like, trying to do it myself. And it was so hard. Because I went back. And because of my swim career... you know, I kind of have a flex schedule, so I can kind of, you know, bounce things around. But work is my priority. Like, I need to work in order to pay bills and do things. School was right underneath it. But then I also had Imbion, and then I had people from cosplay trying to make that my priority, which I couldn't make my priority because it's just cosplay.
Right.
And then at one point, I was... the head of a club on campus. Like, I was like, wait, I've never even been to a meeting.
Like, I remember that.
I've never been to a meeting, and they were like, you're the president of this club. And I was like, excuse me?
I went to the first time you went to that class. We went together.
And I was just like, yo, like, I don't have the time to invest into this club the way you want me to. Everyone in that club was, like, at least 3 years younger than me. And I was like, our priorities are complete. You guys are probably still living at home, where I'm technically living at home by myself. Like, I have roommates. Like, it's like, you know, like, I'm not living with the same
structures. We don't have people who take care of us financially.
Exactly. Like, I had to take out a student loan that, you know, whatever the case is. I had, like, there's so many different priorities that I have that they had. And then when it boiled down to it, like, I remember that semester... after I took that class, it was my last semester there. I was just like, yo, I'm done. Like, I can't do this. I can't keep juggling one thing over the other. And I had a lot more reasons of why I left school. But it was mostly, like...
Time management.
Prioritizing. It didn't feel like something that was really necessary for me because of the path I was heading on.
I'll tell you one of the three reasons why I went to school. Okay. The first reason was because I thought that it was always something that I... be able to use as leverage to get other places in life. I guess this is why this college is so important for some people.
Right.
Two was to continue to cultivate my brain academically. Although, what I enjoyed about college was not the academic, like, math and science. I was more into, like, philosophy and, you know, other sorts of, like, ways of learning. And really what I wanted to go to college for was to continue to find ways to pursue music. So of course, you know, participating in the school's music scene helped me meet people that supported me or gave me opportunities in other arenas outside of school. So it's been fairly successful. College for me is a really, really big networking event.
Yeah.
And so
absolutely,
regardless as to what you learn, how long you stay, like, one of the important things to do in college is to network, and to make opportunities with people who are up and coming or who have opportunities elsewhere, connections elsewhere.
Do you think you were at more of an advantage, at least having taken that time off until you were 24 to come back into school? Like, or were you, like, my situation is a little different because I've been to two schools prior, had a 7-year gap, built an entire swim career, went back to get my degree in a similar field for that career, then realized I don't need it. I already have, like, the established networks. I already could get the jobs that I really want. Plus, I kind of foresaw that I wouldn't be there within the next few years anyways. Like, I'm transitioning out of it as we speak now.
I don't think that there was any advantage for me to... Well, that's not true, actually. The reason why I didn't go to college out of the gate was because I wasn't able to get financial aid.
Okay.
You know, when you're young, it's based off your parents' income or what have you. And
which is, again, ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So at 24, at least in New York State, from what I understand, you're considered independent. And college can then use your financial circumstances to determine whether or not you get financial aid.
Right.
So I waited until 24 because any other time before that, I was considered dependent.
Right.
That was the primary benefit and a big help as to why I went to college in the first place, is because now I can afford to go.
You gotta work the system.
It's
a very messed up system, so you gotta play it to your advantage.
So, you know, having been 24 and having worked anywhere between 17 and 24, you know, you learn life skills that you can take into college and be successful at college. Time management, you know,
right.
Being responsible about your time and not wasting other people's time, which is really, really important. And just being honest with yourself about what you need and what you have trouble with. Like, I'm trash at math. Like, don't get me started. But I was old enough to know, like, listen, this is how I can get help. This is what I need help in.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how I express that without, like, you know, making a big deal about it, you know?
Okay.
So, I mean, I came into college as an adult and not necessarily, like, an adolescent with, like, a not adult mindset. Like, college was a very, very professional experience for me because I was in, I was out, I was doing this or that, and that's it. Like, it wasn't, like, I couldn't have that experience. You know, so I had to treat it like it was my job on my days off from my regular job. Like, I didn't have the opportunity to, like, really be a college kid.
Do you have a regret about it? Do you, like, feel like you wish you would have had that, like, college experience that most people get, not everyone, but most people get to experience?
Okay. I'm born and raised in New York, and I've lived in New York all of my life. So I already know that the college experiences here, especially in the inner city, is not like the college experiences that you see all around you where, like, kids are going off to dorms.
Even if you go to somewhere like in Westchester, like Purchase.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
You have to be away.
Yeah.
For you to have that real college experience. And I think a big part of having that kind of college experience is the fact that you're free from your parents and you can learn about the world around you and do whatever you want to do after not being able to do so for so long.
There's also no safety net for that.
Yeah.
There's no... You have to hold yourself accountable.
Yeah. So, you know, I didn't have that experience because I was already an adult. I lived on my own for years prior to me going to college. So I was already outside of being under my mom's roof and having to follow her rules begrudgingly. Like, that's not, you know, that wasn't very, it wasn't a thing for me. I don't have any regrets in terms of, I do have regrets, actually. The one regret I have is actually, being honest with myself about what I wanted to do. So, And not procrastinating about it. Like, in the beginning of the semester when you have classes, you know, you can take it for a time up until a certain point where you can withdraw from the class. Yes. I was always convincing myself, like, yeah, I can do it. Even though I knew that I couldn't or that I wasn't interested. But I was being lazy enough, and I waited until after the last minute because I was so distracted with, like, work and other things that I'd forgotten to withdraw from a class at the right time.
There's some class I wish I would have withdrew from, but the class I did actually make the switch for, and I'm so happy that I did, I was in a philosophy class that I was just like, yeah, no.
Philosophy's so good, though.
It can't be. Like, there's... I stepped in first day. This first day I stepped in this class, and I was like, yo, this is a dub. This is not the class for me. It was... It seemed like one of those classes where he tried too hard to make you think in a class that was already...
Programmed to make you think.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Where it was like, everything is so much extra, more than it seems. I'm like... Fam, just like relax. You know, and then I remember switching. There was an availability for an exercise science class that I really enjoyed. Shout out to that professor. He was mad cool. Yeah, that was that. But either way, it didn't make much of a difference because it was technically my last semester. So
I mean, it turned out to be that way. But I mean, you know, that's probably one of my biggest regrets. It's just that being so overwhelmed that like I lost track of how to manage smaller, like, micro things in my time, you know, not withdrawing from the class when appropriate. Also, failing to take my own advice and say, hey, listen, this is going to be a struggle for me. I'm not going to be successful at it, and I don't have time not to be successful at it. Like, I didn't put myself in that sort of space. I was going to be, you know, I'm optimistic. I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm going to try, and we're going to work it out. We'll get a C, I guess, on the first test, but we'll get better over time. Like, no, that kind of optimism wasn't necessarily, like, to my benefit. And it put me behind, in certain things because, you know, I didn't fail some tests. I haven't done as well. I didn't, you know, not call it quits, but I didn't recognize that this wasn't going to be a thing for me. And that's the beauty about college is that, like, you can pick your classes. You can pick and choose to do things that you are actually good at or that you actually enjoy or that you could be good at. So me knowing this,
I think I realized I needed to call it quits when they told me I needed to do internships.
Absolutely not. I have a job.
And they were unpaid. And I was just like, listen,
you're not going to waste
my
time.
I was like, internships for what? For things that I've done already? That I have prior work experience for? Fam, listen. They wanted me to go to conferences and stuff. And I was just like,
I can't take off of work for this. I already work as management.
I cannot take off of work for this. Like,
no, I mean, the worst part about it is as it's unpaid, you know. And time is money. And that's when I started to really realize that, like, time was money. And that's why I left school in the first place, because I had to focus on using my time to maximize as much money as I could. Unfortunately, that meant staying at work or things like that. Which leads me to, you know, where I'm at now. Still working, still doing, you know, the regular job thing.
But still actively pursuing your passion.
Oh, yeah. Like, my goal for 2019 and 2020 is to remove myself from, like, the working environment that I'm used to and jumping into music full-time. I mean, I'm not going to be, like, a starving artist. I don't have...
Not music, but, you know,
I don't want to be a starving artist because I need that sense of stability. I'm too old not to have it, and I've had it for too long to not have it. Like, I don't want to be, you know, sleeping on people's couches or, like, not having the funds that I need to do the things that I want to do.
Absolutely.
But it's just stepping away from the field of work where it's not lucrative for you. And jumping into a field of work where it is kind of lucrative for you. So my experiences with work are kind of really demotivating. Like, I'm tired. And it's not just a physical tiredness. It's like a mental and, like, emotional tiredness. And that's what struggle... That's a struggle that I had to overcome while doing this.
Well, you've technically been in retail, what?
Since I was
17, 18.
Yeah. First job was at Toys R Us.
Yeah. I've been doing aquatics now. It'll be 12 years in July. And as much as I love teaching and as much as I love kids, and I've been through the gauntlet of, you know, a number of certifications and the hierarchies and, you know, being a boss and whatnot, I realized quickly, like, it wasn't for me. And then when I was given this opportunity to do what I'm doing now, to work in media and to be more actively creative and still enjoy what I'm doing and
still have money to enjoy the things right. that you like as well.
It was very freeing. And I was like, I thought I had a certain level of freedom when I told myself I'm not going to be a manager in teaching. I mean, I'm not going to be a manager in aquatics. I'll just teach and make my own schedule. I'm still bound by certain things that I can't control, and it drives me nuts, which is another reason why I'm so actively trying to get out of it. But I think if I were able to do this more actively full-time, I would be able to,
like, that's all I want to do. That's all I want to do is be able to. Now, let me say this. I know that doing music full-time can be kind of draining because you lose that creative spark, or mm-hmm. it becomes work. Like, right. there are deadlines, and I get that there's a whole business behind being a musician, right? I would never want it to get to that point where I'm, like, too tired or too creatively empty to, like, work on these things. But I just want to be able to take part in my own passions for myself. Like, right. if I could work a little bit, even part-time.
Being in creative spaces helps.
It does.
So being with other creatives, like, I shout out to my crew at Embeyond, like, love you guys to death. Shout out to you, Demetrius. Like, being with other creatives and being in other creative spaces, I think helps to keep those sparks of joy and passion and flames, that kind of thing, going, because otherwise you're kind of left to your own devices and your tank can't always fill itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I definitely crave those sorts of environments where I can be a part of something where things are motivating me to think or to feel or to express what I'm thinking mm-hmm. or feeling, you know. Mm-hmm. Those are really, really important for the art that, you know, you're trying to put out.
I'm sure that's why you, like, love doing shows. Like, shows are a great creative space to kind of see something new, get a fresh take, or just interact with.
Shows are kind of like those productions where you come up with all these ideas beforehand and it's your time to, like, really, really put it into practice. Like, I really enjoy performing or planning the performances first, you know, so that I can try something new or try something different. And being able to share that with other people, you know, is always a great feeling. I remember at my album release party, there was so much going on about how to plan it and what to do. I was really, really, really excited. And I'm so glad that I was able to, like, map these things out and say, hey, let's do this, or let's try this, or can we have the ability to do X, Y, and Z? And it all was able to be done, you know? I look forward to having those spaces like that.
Do you remember your first show? Like, your first, because you said you performed in high school, but what was that first show that you were kind of on your own for?
My very first, like, performance outside of school was at, I don't think, the place is open anymore. It was a bowling alley in Harlem, Harlem Lanes.
Okay.
And I sang Ordinary People by John Legend because it was one of the first songs that I'd ever heard that actually made me cry. Now, it's a very, very common open mic song, and I didn't know that because I was so, like, new to, like, singing. Okay. And it went over okay, you know. But after that, I was like, you know, I want to do more. I want to make sure that, like, I can get better at this. Like, I'm kind of a competitive person, so improvement is always, like, what can I do next? What can I do different? What can I do better? And that's kind of what drove me.
What was the first show you did that you started, like, doing your own pieces? Was that, like, years later, or was it?
It was in college, actually. There was a man that I met in college, him and his wife, O'Dane Wilby, and
You know, okay.
So, O'Dane.
Small world.
Yeah.
I did one of their shows at school, but I was the poetry scene.
Yeah. So, shout out to O'Dane and, you know, his family, you know, Duvain, his brother, Glenn Ellis, his wife, you know. They're really, really great people that opened a door for me by having me perform at one of their shows at Mod Haven Bar and Grill, where I performed some of my own stuff. And they had a band, And they really brought my music to life for the first time. And it was really, really...
I feel like I performed there as well. Is there like a... It's like a bar area, but then you open up a room.
It's in the back.
It's in the back?
Yeah.
Is that still around?
Yeah.
I would love to like rent out that space for
They rent it out every once in a while. They do what's called theology. And it's basically like their fairly regular showcase of sort of like gospel or Christian-based or whatever, faith-based really, let's say like that. But they come together and they still do shows there, and it's really, really great. I haven't been to one of them, but I've like... I know a lot of people who have, and it's kind of like a moving, really, really moving experience. Okay. So shout out to those guys. Thank you, Odane, so much for just being able to like allow me to have that moment for myself and for my artistry. Without it, I don't know.
Right?
Yeah.
What was that transition like, where you were like, you know what, I'm going to perform my own songs, like? When did you start writing your own songs and then performing? Like, what was that?
I started to write my own songs when I was about 15.
So as soon as you were out the gate with...
Well, yeah. I in high school, you know, we had writing assignments. I took an advanced English class, and it was kind of really interesting because you learn new things about how to write or the words to use when you are writing. And I always enjoyed music, and I touched on doing poetry a lot earlier, so I was just trying to find the balance between poetry and writing music. And I kind of always wanted to be like a big musician. I always wanted to be like Usher because he was my favorite. Like,
okay.
So I was like, okay, so if that I want to be like
that
Usher.
That was my first, one of the first albums that I like really, really got into as a kid. And I learned Nice and Slow. I was fifth grade. No business for me learning Nice and Slow. And for the in-class, like, just our class talent show, I sung that song, not really understanding. Well, I knew, but I didn't know, no.
Right.
And I got, like, a very mixed response. It was good. Because at the time, I think I hadn't quite hit the choir.
Yeah.
But I remember it was, like, the year before or the year after I was in choir. And it was very interesting. I originally also thought I was only in choir because my sister was in choir. I'm like, yeah, let Lawrence join. And she was like, no, you were good until, like, your voice changed.
And then it was a wrap. But, yeah, I always wanted to write songs because I loved love songs. And I always wanted to write good love songs because I thought that was, like, the basis of the music that I had listened to. Like,
yeah.
Good R&B is about a good love song for me.
Do you remember this, not to keep cutting you off, but do you remember the discussion we had while we were walking about the... current state of R&B, like, where...
Yes, so, I do. Oh, God.
Put a pin in that.
We're going to come back to that.
We'll come back to that, but continue.
So, yeah, that's kind of really where I started to at least practice writing songs.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was a self-taught thing. It wasn't like... I didn't really share much of what I was writing with anyone else because I didn't think that anyone else around me was actually, like...
Do you write formally or... in the capacity where, like, you can read and write song structure, that kind of thing?
Are you asking me if so whether or not I can read music?
Yes.
I cannot read music. Okay. I know how to, but I'm not very good at it.
Gotcha.
I learned it in high school. I took music theory and composition classes, but I don't play any instruments and I don't practice reading it because I don't... Usually I'm not in a form where I have to read sheet music.
Okay.
But listening to the radio and listening to your favorite artists, you'll kind of develop a sense of, like... how to write music, if that makes sense. Like,
absolutely.
How to structure your phrases or, like, your verses or what have you. So, I mean, like, that was kind of, like, my teacher. Like, listening to my favorite artists and listening to what other people like to listen to and, like, learning how to write a song based off how some other songs are written or whatever. So, I was about 15 or 16 when I wrote a song called Fantasy. And
that sounds very early, Usher.
Very early. so, you know, the higher-ups in my school really liked it, and we had a program where Lou, a man named Lou was a recording engineer at my school, go figure. And he was like, this song is great. Let's record it. And I was like, I've never recorded myself in my life.
Right.
So we recorded it. They really liked it.
So this album from when you were, is an actual, like,
it is an actual album. It was released.
That's crazy.
It was released in my school.
Yo, we need to, yo.
I have it somewhere.
Shout out to my two followers, because, yeah, I need y'all to, you know, go. Matter of fact, shout out to my FBI guy. I haven't shouted you out in a minute.
What?
My FBI guy, you need to find that album and that any old video content it's of fine. Demetrius Lane for me. Please, and thank you.
Yeah, so I wasn't the only person on the album. We did a few songs with some of my friends, wrote some stuff. Like, it was really, 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 really interesting.
About how long, how many people?
I think that there were about 7 people involved, and the songs were maybe there were like 4 or 5. I can't remember how many songs there were. They were like less than 10.
Okay.
But the album was named after my song, which I was really flattered about. And it came out, that was my first recording experience. I was like 16, and it was the first song I'd ever really like written.
That's amazing. that's a really crazy first experience, like really getting your feet wet on the first go.
So I mean immediately after that, like, it was kind of like searching for college time, and I was having a lot of opportunities. So my music teacher took us on a trip to the Grammy school in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And I, unbeknownst to me, he had entered the fantasy song in a competition. It wasn't like a competition for like winning. It was more like a critique of the songs that you enter. So he entered my song, and he didn't tell me, and it was reviewed by Phil Galston. Now, Phil Galston is a really, really famous songwriter. He's written like Save the Best for Last, by Vanessa Williams, things like that.
Wow,
like,
okay.
And he was okay. He was really, really like, he liked the song. He was like, this song is a really good song.
Okay.
Now, mind you, at the Grammy school, I'm like 15, 16. I'm like, what? This is like, I'm being reviewed by people who work in the music industry, and they're telling me that these are like, there are good things about this music. And I regret not staying in contact with him. But I had his number. Like, I was able to like reach out to him and stuff. I just didn't know what I wanted to do, so I didn't take advantage of that.
Right, you're 16 at the time. That's very... I'd be hard pressed to find any 16-year-old where you're just like, all right, like, let's do this, and you're like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I didn't think that music was necessarily something that I wanted to do full time, and I, like I said, I wanted to be a writer. I actually went to Truman High School to do broadcast journalism because that was what was in the books.
Really?
Yeah, but they don't have a broadcast journalism program. So when I got there, they didn't have the program, so I couldn't take it, and I was just like, I don't know what I want to do now.
So, all right. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I signed up for, to go for. But
would you have considered doing something like Juilliard, LaGuardia, one of those kind of schools, or even like the Purchase Conservatory?
I never wanted to audition for. I never auditioned for a music high school because I didn't know that I wanted to do music until after I started high school. Like, I was going for journalism.
But even in college, I'm saying, like...
Oh, in college, when I was in high school, I did audition for Berklee College of Music, and my music teacher, Mr. Bearcat, Michael Bearcat, he's a opera singer, and he's a principal now. He's a principal now of high school. But he encouraged me. He helped me find my path. So basically, he said that I should teach music, and I considered it for a long time. There's a story here, so let me run through it really quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, my music teacher was the one, of course, who encouraged me to do music altogether, because obviously I was in his classes and in his rehearsals when I was performing in high school. These were run by him, right? Mm. He was my age. Well, he's not. He was 24 when he started there.
Okay.
Right. Fairly young, fairly new teacher. Previously touring for opera companies and going the world over, right?
That's amazing.
I'm this big, tall, white guy. I love him. He's my favorite person. But
was he like one of those opera singers where you look at them and you couldn't tell until they open up their voice?
Yeah, he was very loud, but he was very soft-spoken. But he's very funny. Like,
one of my sister's friends from college, she was this tiny little 5-foot-nothing, like, petite little thing, and like, oh my God. Like, you hear her and you're just like, where the hell did that come from? Like, that's crazy.
Mr. Bearcat.
Operatics are always...
Mr. Like, Bearcat was a baritone.
Oh, wow.
But his technique was, like, super important. Like, when he spoke and when he yelled at the students, like, you could hear it from down the hall. He had
that big bellow of a voice. Yeah,
like, that was incredible for me. But it was him who really actually set me on my path, and he was basically saying that he thought that I would do really well to teach music. Okay. And he encouraged me to apply for Berklee College of Music, and he did me a lot of favors in that regard. He had gotten me an electric piano so I could practice music theory and practice for the audition. He actually helped me. He booked me the trip to Boston, and he paid for it so that I could audition for Berklee College
of
Music.
That's insane.
Yeah. Like, he really
believed in me. We need more teachers like that.
Yeah, he really, really believed in me. And that kind of belief in me changed my life. And it's the reason now why I do music, because I believe in myself because other people have believed in me for so long. So, you know, after that whole experience, of course, I didn't get in. And thank goodness I didn't, because it would have changed the way I saw and studied and practiced music, because it's a very, very form of education, right?
Right.
You know.
It's funny that you said you're glad that you didn't, because a lot of people would find that as a regret. And I think I've reached a point in my life where I am appreciative of the little bumps of my path that led me here, rather than dwell on things.
Well, yeah,
that...
I mean, I just think about it in retrospect. Like, what if everything we wanted, we got it?
And welcome back. What's going on, guys? I hope you've enjoyed this first part of me talking with Demetrius. There's lots of things that we get into, lots more that we get into in episode 2 or part 2 of this, and I'm really excited to share this story with you guys. Please go check out his EP, show him some love, show him some support, check him out on his social media, follow him for shows and updates. He does a killer, killer, killer live show. Definitely an artist to look out for in the upcoming years. And even now, man, he's incredible. I love him. And for you guys, I know it's been a while. I promise you that there's stuff on the way. I've just been busy with other projects, trying to shuffle and get together some sort of time management, project schedule kind of thing. Too many plates and too many chainsaws, if you will. If you know, you know. That's it for now. I'll catch you guys in the next one. As always, follow your path. Peace.